Hi!
Welcome to another
Film Critters
processes.
We both have a lot of phlegm today. We're both very phlegmy because of the weather changes in Seattle. But that's not why we're here to talk to you. That's not what we're here to talk to you about.
Yeah, no, we were snowed in.
Yeah.
The NSA is looking for us because we were snowed in.
God damn it.
And so we watched some more movies. And the movies we watched.
Yeah.
Were.
Willy's Wonderland.
Yeah.
Five Nights at Willy's.
At Nick Cage's. And we also watched another movie, which is maybe going to be in this episode. Maybe it's going to be its own separate episode. You'll see.
You can
look at what's on your screen right now, and you can tell us.
Yeah, if you're even hearing this right now.
Whoa!
Holy shit, bro.
But yeah, so we went down to the old video on delivery service.
down to the Cinematheque of the is in the internet.
We went to is this in Redbox? This movie feels like it should be in Redbox. Willy's Wonderland Redbox. It, you know what? It is. We went down to the old Redbox, and we rented out Willy's Wonderland.
Yeah, head on down to your local Redbox and pick it up. Yeah, I'm just gonna come right out with it. You guys might be a little surprised to hear this. It's kind of not good.
It's kind of
not a good movie.
And it's like, I kind of went in expecting or hoping.
Yeah.
For, because we have Psycho Goreman came out recently, and I was like, maybe it'll be like that. You know, like fun. And self-aware, but not in the annoying way.
Yeah.
But it was...
Yeah, it seemed like it would be kind of, I don't know, like having fun with it, you know?
Yeah. But it was self-aware in the bad way. And it was not having fun with itself. So let's okay, it's the premise of the film. You can watch the trailer, but it literally is just Five Nights at Freddy's but with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. So
with Nicolas Cage doing like the guy from Drive.
yeah. And it's just it's really kind of unfocused, uninspired. Nicolas Cage largely does not talk for he doesn't talk at all for the movie.
No, he is a stoic character, and so he doesn't speak. And then the film kind of like contrives itself around that.
Yeah.
Like people don't ever really seem to like, they notice that he doesn't talk, but they never seem to comment on the fact that he doesn't talk. Like they don't seem concerned about it. It's very weird that nobody seems to notice that he just doesn't have any lines. Maybe it cost too much if he had to. Maybe if he spoke, his they had to pay him more, and so they just did that instead.
That's kind of what I was wondering. If he's like a pay by the word actor, you know what I mean? Just I don't know. Like that is kind of like a microcosm of the mischances of this movie. And I don't know. It like not having him kind of go like completely fully overboard. It's just such a missed chance. It's just such a missed opportunity. I don't know.
Right? Like, it's... Because, like, the trailer very much so made it seem like this was going to be, like Nick Cage's new typecast thing is, like, Mandy. Like people are like, cool, you get Nick Cage in, he goes crazy, he's a goofball, he gets covered in blood, he's really intense and in his feelings.
Yeah.
And so that's what the
trailer
made it feel like it was going to be. But it was like I said, like it's like Mandy, but then like they want him to be cool in the way the Drive guy is cool.
yeah, exactly. Like he's posed as this sort of... like this really He's such like a badass, and he's like Chuck Norris, you know, he's like the Chuck Norris of Five Night Freddy, of Fuck Nut Frederick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It just makes it so much more boring.
The film feels like it's just a huge experiment to see if they can sell the shirts and Funko Pops.
Yeah.
Like this feels like a Funko Pop movie.
Well, like it's definitely a, like they couldn't get the rights to Freddy situation. They were probably, I'm guessing they were trying to. The Wikipedia has some sort of thing about how like, oh, this is based on a, you know, a short story that was written in 2016 or something like that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, let me.
In 2016? That's weird because Five Nights at Freddy's came out in 2014.
yeah. That's about when, oh, no, short film, Wally's Wonderland from 2016.
Oh.
which, that was Freddy Fever, but the things that they come up with, like, okay, the animatronics in Willy's Wonderland were just, like, really boring.
Yeah, finding out that it was based on a short film makes so much sense. Because this feels like if you've ever watched Hulu's short horror films, they're not great, but they're like 5 minutes long. And this feels like you took that and stretched it into a 90-minute film.
Yeah, for real. It didn't feel out of place on like a kind of, you know, like a hidden list on Shudder somewhere or something like that.
It also, let me just say, very funny to see the poster's tagline being 2020 isn't over yet, kids, and then the release date, February 12th, 2021.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? I wonder if that was, I wonder if that was, like, tongue-in-cheek. Like, oh. Yeah, no, scheduled for theatrical release, October
30,
2020.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a late 2020 release. And then... Oops.
Oopsie.
I think it's like... The reason it feels... Okay, my big problem with it is that the film feels so much like not just like that it's cashing in on Freddy Fever, but that it's just cashing in on like nerd guy... who shows you a really cool movie that like he's like, oh man, like check out this like cult film I found, like this, oh, like you've never seen fucking Twisted Tunes, like you've never seen like The Puppet Master, like you've never seen the Banana Splits movie where they take an old intellectual property and they make it fucked up. Like it feels like it's aiming to be at those guys, including the casting of Nicolas Cage, but it's like such a soulless version of like why those dudes love that movie. And like I'm sure those dudes still love this movie because they're very usually easy to please. It's kind of concept driven, but it just feels so soulless. It feels such a bad execution on the ideas.
Yeah, I mean it almost feels kind of like this sort of I don't know, kind of a cynical sort of aggregated, like, oh, if we do a movie with these, like, tags in it, like, oh, Nicolas Cage, oh, it's like Five Nights at Freddy's, oh, silent protagonist, slasher movie with horny teens
who have that Stranger Things style of writing I fucking hate, where they, like, all hate each other but are friends and have no reason to be hanging out.
Yeah, for real. Have some fun with it, please. Don't just, like, you know, it just feels like they were clocking in. They, like, oh, gotta go to the content factory, gotta make some content.
I watched this film with friend of the pod, Lonnie, and they had a great point to make about it, too, where they were like, I want to see the movie that takes place in the flashbacks. Like, a much more interesting film would be the thing that they spend, like, 2 minutes on, where it's like, there was an old, like, kids' arcade kind of thing that had these animatronics, and it was being run by a satanic cult of cannibals. So we went to go kill them, and they killed themselves in a ritual sacrifice, and it made the animatronics come alive, and they hunted people at night. So we have to ritualistically sacrifice someone to them every year so that they don't kill the children in our town. Like, that is a much more interesting film than what we got. Like, just tell that entire story. Or set it being like, oh, here's the story of how the animatronics were hunting people.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that at the core of the film is almost, it's, like, almost the only thing I like about it. And, yeah, like you said, like, if they had kind of capitalized on that a little bit better, I feel like that kind of would have separated it from... Although, I don't know, is there a subtext of that in Five Nights at Freddy's? Is that, like, a thing?
I mean...
In the games? I don't even remember.
You could definitely make a joke, or you could, like, make a comparison of, like, that being a theme... with regards to the idea of, like, ritualistic sacrifice as, like, in this movie sense of, like, as a way to keep small businesses intact in, like, off-road attractions because, like, that's the only thing that brings in money to the town. And right. Five Nights at Freddy's whole bit of, like, you get paid less than minimum wage for a job where you have to avoid being killed literally every night that you do it. Like, the Five Nights at Freddy's games definitely have a sort of, like, tongue-in-cheek joke about, like, exploitative service work and, like, graveyard shifts being, like, horribly deleterious on the human body while paying you fucking garbage wages.
Yeah. I think that would have been, like, a really cool kind of road for the movie, for Willy's Wonderland to go down. For the official Five Nights at Freddy's movie.
Yeah.
No. for Willy's Wonderland to go down. I mean, it does its own kind of separate little thing where it seems to be more kind of about, or rather, like, in like, the images and what it's, you know, I guess trying to put forward is, like, kind of about how those predatory jobs, like, you kind of eke out your own sort of enjoyment from, you know, like, when you're the closer and that your boss isn't there and you're alone and you can fuck around. That was a touch that I almost liked, although the pinball shit got pretty gratuitous and annoying after a certain point. That being the case, I feel like if they had I don't know, kind of a firmer grasp on like themes and like that, those types of like images and that, those ideas, I would have been more interested and I would have paid so much more attention.
Yeah. God, there's, I think to me, the real tell of like the cynicism of this film is that it is a movie about killer, shitty roadside animatronics.
Yeah.
And they are mostly bad CGI and people in, like, costume heads. Like, one of them is just, like, a sexy lady. That's very clearly, like, just a woman wearing a head for most of the scenes. Like, yeah. You literally, like, have every right to just do shitty costumes and shitty animatronics that don't move right and, like, look bad and fake because that's what they are.
Uh-huh.
And you still made them computers.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, kind of a side note about that costume. Didn't that bitch look just like the main character in Inside Out?
Yes.
Like, I could not stop thinking about Inside Out whenever she was on the screen.
Yeah, God, what was her fucking name?
Happiness or whatever.
No, not Joy. Not the one from Inside Out. The one in the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because Siren Sarah.
Siren Sarah.
Yeah, look at this bitch. Siren Sarah. Oh, she has a Villains Wiki article. Yeah, no, she just looks like the Inside Out bitch. I don't like her being horny and having Adobe After Effects mouth on. I do like the bit where it's her and the racist one in the hallway and the kid just pushes past them. It's trying to capture on things that are popular of people who like cult films. It is just what it feels like from beginning to end.
And I I kind of also think that, like, there's a good chance, there's kind of a good chance to do a sort of study of, like, genre and, like, how to worship a genre that you're working in. Jay, did you ever end up seeing Psycho Gorman?
Yes. Did you see, did you see it?
I saw it. I don't know how much, like, we can squeeze in, like, a quick segment in here to, because I did want to just kind of compare and contrast the movies, because I think that Psycho Gorman, as much as, like, you know, I didn't like completely adore the film or whatever, but I thought it was really cute, and I thought it really, like, had a lot of love for, like, the Power Rangers, like, enemy designs and costumes and stuff from that kind of era.
Yeah, no, like, the thing about this that ended up, like, the thing about Psycho Gorman it nailed is that because it was doing, like, a riff on, like Power Rangers and, like, 90s kids media stuff, it knew that, like, okay, therefore, like, all of these characters should be in, like, big funny costumes that are clearly a person in a rubber suit, because that is what enemies in these shows look like. So it's fine if it doesn't look convincing, because it's a riff on things that didn't look convincing. And this movie is a riff on things that didn't look convincing, but it tries to make them look convincing, which makes them more unconvincing.
The level of detail, there's, like, a lot to be desired. Like you were saying, like, the some of the designs for the costumes were really whack. A lot of the concepts behind some of the animatronics and just
I hated the, like, chameleon one as well.
Terrible.
Because it's like, one, I couldn't, so okay, it not looking like a lizard, that could have been fine. That's, like, fine for animatronics. But then they add on top of that, like, this weird color effect where it's like skin keeps changing colors, and they, like, mention it because it's a chameleon, and it's like, animatronics don't do that.
Yeah.
Like that, like the effect looks bad. I couldn't tell that that's what the effect was supposed to be until they said it. It looks like shit. It doesn't add to the, like, effect of it. It doesn't make it creepier. It just looks like you spent money to make your thing look worse than it already does.
Yeah, for real. And, like, the thing, kind of part of the issue that I have with some of the design and everything like that is that they just don't look like real animatronics. They look like someone being like, oh, what if an animatronic looked, like, fucked up out of the box?
Yeah.
You know? Or, like, you know, what if it, I don't know, what kind of crazy ideas can we come up with for what our animatronics should look like? But I've never seen, even like, without bloodstains and without decay or whatever, like, I've never seen an animatronic band that, you know, looks like this. I don't know. Kind of sweating hairs over some of the design choices here, but I just really thought it fell short in those departments.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think that's, like, a fair thing to criticize about it, too, is because it's, like, it's not even really, like, splitting hairs. It's like, these are, like, failures in designing your enemies for a film that is supposed to be riffing on a specific, like, aesthetic.
Yeah.
Willy himself, like, is kind of off, but I can see how, like, if it was a super amateur animatronic, why it would look like that. The gator and gorilla looked okay, but then when the gorilla was in motion, it looked, like, wrong still.
Yeah, that was so bizarre.
The ostrich was not good. The ostrich was, like, a peak example of them being like, we're gonna, like, have this, like, weird, overly complicated animation, which is not what an animatronic looks like, and is not why animatronics are creepy.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then there's the chameleon and the siren, who are just fucking atrocious. And then the racist one, which I don't even remember what he fucking looks like. Maybe Tito's turtle.
Okay, so I keep finding, I keep Google image searching aspects of Willy's Wonderland, and it turns out that a lot of people on, let's say, for example, DeviantArt.
I was gonna say, are you also seeing all the weird DeviantArt fan art of these characters?
Yeah, there's, like, a bunch of fan art that's, like, by, like, teenagers, I have to assume, of Willy's Wonderland. Hold on, let me search Willy's Wonderland on DeviantArt and see just how popular.
Let me, I do want to show you this one, which is titled The Scrapped Willy's Wonderland Characters. I'm assuming these are fan characters. But that, like, literally all of them have better designs than the actual characters in the movie.
I mean, I guess it makes sense that, like, the sort of specific sort of, like, fandom around Five Nights at Freddy's would extend to kind of obsessing over this movie. It seems like a lot of the fan art has petered out now that the movie is out, which I think is funny.
That's extremely funny, yeah.
Oh, someone drew porn, I guess.
Oh, alrighty.
Of the animatronics. That's...
I mean, I guess right. That's... Because that's an inevitability.
Of the fucking chameleon one, too.
The like, ugliest one? Jesus.
Yeah, the chameleon and the... And Siren Sarah.
Oh, that makes sense. I forgot that straight people will, like... Straight men with, like, who have, like, DeviantArt accounts will just draw, like, fucking anything. I mean, I guess, like, gay men will do the same thing, too, but I feel like I see just the most hideous characters possible get that a lot less.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the person also, it's one of those things where they've, like, drawn the image in stunning detail and accuracy, and then they've drew, like, a funny little rage face to put over the image, and they wrote the word poggers.
Oh.
So it's kind of them being like, haha, I'm just joking. I don't want to see the girls fuck. That is absolutely not. I have absolutely not shared my innermost desires through an ironic.
Ironic. Oh, man. My boyfriend showed me this, like, porn artist who draws porn of, like, the Wojax.
That's really funny.
And they're like, they do that same thing where they're like, no, it's like ironic distance, but it's like way too detailed. And it's like, no, you've sexually imprinted on the Wojax and you just like don't want to admit it. That's what this movie feels like. This movie feels like it's in the same genre as like ironic air quotes porn that is like very clearly not ironic. But because it's trapped between those, it's neither good irony nor good porn.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of caught in between. Like, it doesn't really want to be real, but then it kind of does. You know, it wants to just be like, oh, this is like a fun, like, style genre parody, and like we're using these cultural images. Oh, really cute drawing of Freddy and Foxy. Wow. Yeah, it's just a little bit too, I don't know. It needs to take itself more seriously and less seriously, which is a problem that many films have. Oh, well. Oh, well. What would you... if we're, I guess, ready to move on to our rating scheme, what would you rather have spent your streaming bucks on?
God. probably, like, a Steam Pack sale of, like, all of the Five Nights at Freddy's games.
Yeah, I haven't played them, and they look kind
of
interesting.
They're basically jump scare Pac-Man. Like, it's that same sort of basic mechanic of, like, every enemy has his own like approach path, and you have to learn the systems, and then you can figure out how to master them and get through them.
Yeah, I like the idea of Five Nights at Freddy's. I think the original game has like some good mechanics and stuff. I haven't really kept close attention since the first one. There are probably too many.
There's a shocking number of them. I will say that right now.
I would rather have spent my money on Five Nights at Freddy's fan art.
Oh, like a commission?
Of me hanging out with my friends, Foxy the Fox and
Chica.
Cream the Rabbit. Or whatever.
Cream the Rabbit. It's Bon. Okay, so the original ones are Bonnie the Rabbit.
Yeah.
Chica the Chicken. Uh-huh. She's the girl. And she has the little bib on that says, let's eat. Foxy the Fox. Freddy. Gold Freddy. And I think that's all of them. Bonnie. Yeah, Bonnie Bunny, Chica Chicken, Foxy Fox, Foxy the Pirate, and yeah. Yeah, that's basically all of them. And then there's more. They had Balloon Boy in the second one. That's I swear to God, the character's name is Balloon Boy.
You can't just call someone Balloon Boy.
You can't just call him Balloon Boy. People are going to think you're talking about the other Balloon Boy, the more famous Balloon Boy.
Oh my God. Every time someone retweets that fucking post again, it's the funniest fucking thing in the world.
It literally just gets funnier.
Oh my God. A boy is floating away right now. Go outside. Look into the sky
and see if we can find Balloon Boy. But yeah. So the next film we watched is a bit of a change of pace.
Yeah.
In that it's, I don't want to say it's good. That feels really subjective. It's better than this movie was. It's better than Willy's Wonderland. That's objective.
Yeah. Objectively, absolutely better. We checked out St. Maud. I ended up really, really, really liking St. Maud a lot.
Yeah, no, for a debut film especially, like it's pretty tightly, like it is a pretty tightly constructed film.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that kind of stood out to me at first was, and this is something that I was kind of having like a conversation with my roommate about, which is that like, it kind of feels like, it has the same sort of attitude as like 70s kind of interpersonal thrillers and like, you know, kind of psychological warfare types of movies. But it does a little bit have this kind of like really modern, like shot construction and framing, but in a way that like weirdly kind of works, because the main actress, who I do want to like give a fucking enormous shout out to, Morfydd Clark. I hope that's Morfydd. I hope that's pronounced correctly. But either way, not only does she do an incredible performance as this sort of like unraveling main character who's kind of like has this weird and like very kind of refracted and distant relationship to her own desire, but like she also is shot in these like really stark ways where like they'll place the lighting in like just the weirdest places, like under her chin or just like behind her or just like at like crazy angles, and then they'll also place the camera at like some crazy angle, and it just makes her look like she's never slept in her life and she's just like losing her mind. I thought that like it's kind of, the visual style is not something I usually go for, but I think it kind of actually worked super like in service of what the movie was trying to do.
Yeah, because I think the reason why it works especially here is because it's like, this is basically a film where it's not so much that there's like an unreliable narrator, because like there is, but it's that it's like, it is a film where it has enough cues to tell and communicate to you, the audience, that essentially what you are seeing are delusions. But it also puts you in the subjective experience of like, okay, but you are going to empathize with the main character of this film, and so you are going to be subject to the same delusions she is.
Yeah.
So even if don't follow her logic, you are going to see and experience things the exact same way she is seeing and experiencing them. And the way the film is filmed makes it very explicitly clear that like that is what is going on. And that I think it works because it makes it feel just as intrusive on you, the audience, as it probably feels on Maud, the character, to have these things intruding on her.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fairness, I will say that the movie kind of, it asks more and more of you as the runtime goes on, where like her hallucinations get kind of more and more pronounced. There's this imagery of her with like these glowing angel wings. There's obviously like the very, very end, which, you know, is kind of this like interplay between these images of her like, you know, self-immolating, and she's like, she rises into heaven gracefully.
She's literally transformed into a saint whom all fall before, and is like overwhelmed with the ecstasy and beauty of God's love.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's of course this like half second shot of her like screaming in agony, you know,
engulfed in flames.
Yeah, just on fire.
Which like that actually go on, finish your thought. We'll return to that.
I mean, like, yeah, up until those points, I feel like the movie threads the needle nicely so that, like, once you get there, like, once you get to the situation where, like, she's hallucinating that Amanda, who she's doing, who she's, like, doing caregiver stuff for, is, like, possessed or whatever, the movie has kind of strung you along in, like, very, very specific, particular ways with her hallucinations and her like, things that she imagines about the world and such.
Yeah, no, and like, so like I'm very torn on that last second shot.
Yeah,
because on one hand I do appreciate that the film kind of moves against the usual impulse in these kind of films to either over explain that it's all in the character's head or leave it ambiguous in a way that can be like really unsatisfying, where they're like, was she just imagining this, or is this actually what's happening? You the viewer will have to guess yourself.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, it's very successful and it's really powerful and impactful for doing that. And I feel like it works at doing what it does. I don't know how I feel about it, because it really just feels mean-spirited. Like, that's my only critique of it, is that it's like, it really feels like just kind of like the film gives you enough to make it clear that when you are seeing her in this ecstatic moment, it is that you, the audience, know that that is not what is happening. Like, you know what is actually happening in this scene, and that alone is like creates like a horrifying tension. And so then showing it really just kind of feels like just like rubbing your nose in it. And to an extent, that sort of makes it more effective, because it's like it kind of catches you in that moment wanting to buy into the delusions in the same way she wants to buy into them. You know, like, you want her to be happy and satisfied and fulfilled. And so it kind of snatches it away from you at the last moment to be like, you are acting like her.
Yeah,
like, you can't save her by choosing to just believe in something that you know isn't true. Like, you have to deal with what's actually happening.
Yeah,
but man, is it mean. But man, does it just make you go like, oh man, but I let me be delusional. let me buy into it.
The fiction that I've created for myself is so comfy.
What a perfect just like interplay of like the what you were seeing on screen and the effects that it has on the audience, and like what a like brilliant film in that. Like, what a film that understands how to use the medium to its fullest extent to tell basically a story about a bi girl in denial who gives into religious delusions in response to trauma.
Yeah. And that's kind of the other, like, I kind of actually did not expect this movie to be quite as gay as it was, somehow, from the trailers. I kind of like missed that, kind of subtext, I guess, but it's pretty much about her. I mean, like, there's this kind of top layer of just like, oh, I need to save somebody's soul. I need to provide care. I need to, you know, this is like a mission from God, like all of this stuff. But then like the sort of, you know, the everything that kind of lies under the surface there of like, this is part of a kind of like network of delusions about desire and like how the character kind of communicates her desire and like the kind of things that she invents for herself and yada, yada, yada. And that stuff kind of, there's this amazing through line in the movie where, Amanda, who's like an atheist, she's like, Maud kind of goes through this like sort of orgasmic seeming, like, you know, communication from God that she like experiences to kind of throughout the film. And she wants really badly for like Amanda to feel it too. And Amanda claims to be feeling the same thing, but then later on there's this like whole thing where like, oh, Maud drove away the woman that I was fucking, and she was going behind my back doing all this stuff, and I'm gonna embarrass her in front of this party, and also I was lying about that experience. And the way that kind of like spins out her like mental deterioration is like, I don't know. It's a really, really strong through line.
Yeah. For sure. Oh man. The way in which like it kind of reflects that like she herself, like Amanda, her name, right?
Amanda.
Yeah, like her, she almost reflects Maude's desire in the same way, but less delusional because she's older and more satisfied in her like life, where she also has this idea of like, you know what, I'll go along with this for Maude's sake, because like, you know, maybe I can like teach her to unwind, you know, maybe I got to push her and break her and get her out of her shell. And the difference between Maude and Amanda then comes to be shown as like the second Amanda is made aware, oh, there is no, like, I am not going to be the person to save this person. She cuts ties.
Yeah.
She's like, no. Like, I actually cannot be responsible for you dealing with whatever you're dealing with. That is not the dynamic that we have. That is not a relationship that is appropriate for us to have. I am cutting ties. I was willing to work within it. But, like, you are crossing a line of my boundaries. And Maude's response to that is, like, to just double down hard on self-destruction and then double down harder on her delusions. Another thing I also like, this is like a personal interpretation. I also kind of wonder if the physical symptoms she keeps feeling is supposed to sort of suggest another layer to it, where it's because like, so Maude is like a hospice. Like she's like a trained nurse essentially.
Yeah.
And she is shown having these like physical symptoms of agony and ecstasy, which to me suggests that she might have like some sort of medical complication, like possibly even an infection. Cause like we see that like she's like has wounds that she's allowing to fester.
Yeah.
And so part of me wonders is like, oh, is there even like a sort of another meta commentary to there where it's like she's so obsessed with saving other people and like trying to resolve others as a way to save herself that she's even trying to apply her nursing skills to other people rather than recognizing like her own symptoms of illness that she needs to take care of, which is causing psychosis as like a side effect. Because like certain illnesses can like basically fuck your brain up and like give you psychosis as a response.
Yeah. I mean, like there's this whole kind of implication that she has PTSD from, I guess, you know, failing to save somebody's life before, you know, in spite of CPR or whatever.
It does also seem to suggest, given the one scene when she hooks up with the man, that it's not only that she failed to save that person, but that she might have accidentally, like, killed them in the process. That, like, she might have been doing CPR too roughly and, like, cracked their ribs or something, and, like, that's what caused them to die. Because when the other nurse runs into her, God. The implication is that, like, oh, you're still practicing. And so it's like, it's very much so suggested that it was not just a case of like a patient died under your care. It was a like a patient died as a direct like response, as like a direct effect of like something that you did. That entire sequence when she gives up on religion for a bit and like devolves into just broken attempts at trying to like very, very quickly fix herself via throwing herself into like the deepest, farthest end of like previous bad behavior that she used to have. So very real. Perfectly performed, perfectly filmed, absolutely captures exactly how horrifying and alienating that is.
It kind of paints like a portrait of it's a very extreme depiction of like this kind of like pendulum swinging thing of just like, oh, I need to help other people. Oh, I need to self-care and like do things for myself. Oh, I've gone too crazy. I'm like off the deep end on this end. So I need to scale back. Like it does a good job of kind of portraying the like difficulties and pitfalls of kind of threading that needle, while also just focusing on really like interesting and like, layered characters.
Yeah. What a film that I like immediately I'm like, oh, I can't wait to show this to someone else.
yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting and it's really good. A lot better than I thought it was going to be, really.
I honestly went in expecting it to be okay or bad.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, I expected it to be, like, the worst kind of elevated A24 horror. And the film's a lot better than an elevated horror film, is the best way to put it.
I mean, it's not really even trying to, like, it's kind of sort of portrays itself as that, like, a little bit, but it then it's, like, way less about the horror. Like, you know, like every movie that I like that's in these sort of wheelhouses, it's, like, a lot more about the personal drama.
Yeah.
Of folks.
It really is first reformed for girls. like it's the exact same sort of like character who like retreats into like religion and like a sense of higher duty and calling as a way to cope with like their own personal baggage. And even right down to having somewhat similar endings, though, like you would have to see First Reformed to know what I'm talking about, because it is distinct in a very specific way. But it's that it's a very similar sort of ending of like the highest accomplishment of your martyr complex, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge martyr complex movie for sure. Yeah, A24 is like very, very hit and miss. I actually just kind of hopped over to their Wikipedia page. Apparently, well, I just was reminded that they acquired the rights to Hasbin Hotel.
Or at least congratulations.
Congrats to A24. I'm really excited to see your Hasbin Hotel, your produced Hasbin Hotel TV show. Fantastic. Can't wait.
A24, the funniest thing in the world to me is that A24 not only is getting into television production, but that they announced that I guess they've been in it for a while, apparently. But like nothing I've heard of.
Yeah, no, they've made
I guess Euphoria.
Pod Save America. Yeah. Euphoria, yeah. Euphoria is pretty big deal. But Euphoria is that's 2019. That's pretty recent. So I don't know, to be dipping into Hasbin Hotel, it's
very funny. Very funny that's how I found out that A24 does television.
Yeah, same here.
I did like the reveal that isn't underlined super heavily that she also changed her name at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Assumedly to give herself, and it's like kind of left unopened, like unexplained why, like if she changed her name in order to like continue practicing, or if she just changed her name because like her actual name is like Katie or something. Like her name sounds very normie, and so it's obvious that like, oh, she picked a name that sounds more like Catholic. Yeah. Like she literally picked a name that sounds more Catholic.
Yeah, God. Yeah, I noticed that she has, she like changes her whole like sense of self around these like beliefs and like ways of being and stuff.
It's really fascinating to see a film that finally tackles the issue of tradcath trans Twitter.
Dear Jesus. I mean, yeah.
Because there's also the line at the end of the scene, the scene with the guy who ends up raping her, where he mentions that like before she became Maud, she was like a like alcoholic, like promiscuous woman.
Yeah.
So it's sort of implied that like she abandoned the Katie identity in part because of PTSD over the patient, but also in part because of like probably past trauma from just like probably doing a lot of like very self-harmy behavior. She has like self-harm scars in one scene that like you can kind of only like briefly glimpse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. God, yeah. There's a lot to this character. I mean, like it's, you know, I like a movie that is, you know, very interested in its characters. You can tell that there was like a lot of thought and a lot of kind of background. I mean, certainly plenty of like set design choices kind of between like Maud's like tiny little dingy horrible apartment and Amanda's like beautiful place and like all of her stuff. I don't know. Yeah, it's very well thought out. And I also really liked the subplot about the like house girl who's like fucking Amanda that like Maud is super jealous of and has this like confrontation with, where she's like, oh, her soul, this is about her soul and her getting into heaven and God and all this stuff. And like, it just kind of gets flipped around on her, and the other girl ends up becoming like the caregiver or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a lot of really good shit here.
I feel like too, like a big part of it is also because it's like Amanda kind of calls her on her bluff, where it's like, it's not even just in like the bisexual subtext of like, oh, is Maude jealous of this because she wants to be with her? But it's very clear that like, because like you mentioning the contrast between her apartment and Amanda's like beautiful, gorgeous house, is that is that there's also a jealousy of like Maude wants to be Amanda or be with a person like Amanda because she wants to be like loved and indulged and taken care of in these ways that she won't actually allow herself to be.
Yeah.
And Amanda kind of calls her on life. Like Amanda calls her on that, where it's like, you are trying to love someone as a way to get around loving yourself. And that like, yeah, you need to like, not even just like you need to be gay, girl, but like you need to like be gay for yourself, girl.
Gay comes from within. You have to really want to. Yeah.
The homo starts with the solo.
Jesus. Yeah, you have to be self-sexual
before you can be self anything. Real quick, complete sidebar, by the way, I was trying to figure out where Maude looked familiar, and she is Beth Keller, the main girl in Crawl. Or not the main girl, she's oh wait, yeah, that is the main girl. She's the main girl in Crawl.
The main
girl in Crawl's sister, rather.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But who's also in the film pretty well, because I was like, I definitely have seen her before, but I couldn't place it. But also, sidebar, completely funny thing, she's also in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, the movie.
Yeah, I saw that. That's great. Oh shit, apparently she's gonna be Galadriel in the fucking Lord of the Rings TV series. I'm fucking pumped.
Oh, that's
dude.
Sick. She's in His Dark Materials. This bitch loves fantasy.
Yeah.
This bitch loves a period piece.
God bless her. Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic actress. Wonderful, wonderful performances all around.
Really good, really great entry in the House of Psychotic Woman genre.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that's great about this film is that it's like, we talk about it, it's very dense, it's very juicy. It's also like, it's a quick watch. It's not even 90 minutes. It's like just under half an hour and a half. It's a quick watch. It is a very efficient film. It knows how to tell its story, get in and out. I'm very excited to see what the director does. I assume probably once she's given more like budget and like a larger like things to work with. But it's very nice to see someone whose debut film understands like how to get in and get out and tell their story and kind of demonstrate their craft.
Yeah, it's just good shit. This is when A24 is doing the work.
Yeah, this is when they're hitting home runs. This is when they're giving small or debut directors a chance to just fucking nail it in one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would rather have spent my streaming ticket price on
I think I would have felt really good if I spent my ticket money on like a tithe.
Yeah, you know, I've been really lately, I've been having this kind of like newfound obsession for Catholic aesthetics. I watched the movie The Devils recently, which, by the way, one of the choices on our Patreon poll for next month's Film Critters throws it back for our $5 and up patrons, which you can go vote on right now, I think, probably. But anyway, Catholic aesthetics are so sexy. I would probably rather have spent my ticket price on like some votive candles or like I don't know, maybe like some rosary shit to kind of hang on my wall. I feel like the sort of, what do you call it? The like asceticism or like the celibacy really creates this like undercurrent of horniness that comes through in their like aesthetic choices and their art. That I really appreciate.
It's that repression thing. It's that repression and ecstasy through indirect pleasure, like Sebastian shit, Saint Sebastian type beat.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I would rather spend my ticket price on that. That being that, thank you guys for joining us for this double ep.
Yeah, we haven't done it in a while. We've been doing a lot of movies that have quite a lot to talk about, so this one was a fun little return to form.
Yeah. And we're chugging through a whole lot of other movies. We've got probably another double episode coming soon that is going to be a lot more
trashy
yeah. and shitty films, but we're really, really excited about it. And for our Patreon stuff, go sub to our Patreon if you haven't yet. We have a separate series where we talk about films from bygone eras called Film Critters Throws It Back. Yeah. And people vote on a poll to determine what movie we talk about. And for the month of February, it was Bound, classic neo-noir from the Wachowski sisters.
Yeah.
With our friend Mia.
Yeah.
Who guested on the episode, co-creator of We Know the Devil / Heaven Will Be Mine, etc.
Maker of comics, poster of takes.
Maker of comics.
Les of beads.
Drawer of titties. And yeah, so go check that out. And next month, Mia will probably be on again, because our poll for March is Mia gets to pick the movie, and it's just a bunch of obscure Criterion picks from her. From her watch list, so that's fun.
Yeah.
So be excited. That's gonna be a lot of fun. And I'm excited for that. Anything else, Jay?
Little known fact: we're streaming. Hey!
Oh shit!
You should join our Discord because we put announcements for it in there. Every day that we're doing it, and also you can talk about movies and stuff. But if you do want to just check
Discord's
out our streams
great.
And you hate Discord, reasonable, twitch.tv/jbearhat.
I am twitch.tv/baru, 2 R's, 6 O's. Don't fucking forget it. Jay, what's your schedule? What are you playing?
So right now I'm finishing up, Bioshock 2, probably, maybe by the time this episode comes out, maybe a little after. And then I don't know what I'm playing next. 100%, I am leaning towards Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
Oh, hell yeah.
Doing that on Mondays. On Wednesdays right now, I'm doing Alan Wake, and then I'm going to continue on with more Remedy Entertainment games. And then on Saturdays, I've been doing short games. And not this Saturday, at some Saturday, maybe it'll be in the past by the time you listen to this, maybe it'll be in the future. I'm actually going to be doing, Stranglehold, the John Woo game.
Yeah. I'm really excited for that. I have to.
I also have to rewatch. Yeah. Hardboiled.
But you know, any excuse to rewatch Hardboiled is a good excuse. But yeah, I am playing. On Tuesday nights, I play Hades. I'm gonna beat it. I'm gonna beat it next week. Next week. Join me next Tuesday, February 23rd. I'm gonna beat Hades. I'm gonna beat him, and I'm gonna beat the game. And then on Fridays, I kind of just hang out with my friend Rizzo the Cat. I do VTubing. I'm a little cartoon rabbit, and my friend, a cartoon cat, joins me, and I've been playing Yume Nikki, and, you know, figuring out other stuff to do. That's been really fun. I really like being a cartoon character sometimes, and that's good, and that's great. So join us for that. And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening, and hope you enjoyed these films in some way. Hope you enjoyed us talking about them, and we'll see you sometime.
Someday.
Someday.
Someday we will be there.
we'll roll around. I mean, like, you know, you got couch space, right? Yeah. Just keep your couch space open. Just, like, don't invite anybody.
If you've got an empty room, keep it empty.
Yeah. I'm adaptable. I can sleep on the floor. Just give me, like, a blanket or something. It's fine. Just, you know, it's fine. Well, my name's Baru.
I'm Jay Bearhat.
Bye.
Bye.